You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the button so you get the podcast right when it goes live. We will talk to Joe Ostrowski, good old Joe O, now the host of BetQL Daily, Monday through Friday, longtime host at 670 The Score in Chicago, and my former running mate on Chicken Dinner. We started this show back in August of 2016. I can't believe it's almost been 5 years since we've been rocking the balk. And that was at a time when you couldn't really talk sports betting at all on Chicago radio or television. Just crazy to think how the space has changed in such a short period of time. We'll talk about how we started the show, some of our favorite moments, and what it's like to hang out in person with Shea and Irving. We brought Shea into the studio at Tribune Tower multiple times, twice or three times. And then we actually went out drinking with him on an opening Thursday of the men's basketball tournament. What a day that was. I'm still recovering from that day. Record check 113, 102, and 4, up 2.4 units. But I'm feeling pretty good right now. Two wins in the last three. And I honestly thought the White Sox run line on Sunday was a pretty decent bet at plus 150. They left the bases loaded in the second. They left two on in the third. And they had first and second with nobody out in either the fourth or the fifth and didn't score. End up losing the game, but that's what happens when you don't step on a throat. So I'm starting to see the board better. And as we head into a Tuesday on the Major League Baseball slate, I fired out four picks today. Brewers, money line and run line against the Cubbies. The under in Washington, St. Louis, 7.5. That market is now 7. And Cleveland, Chicago, under 7, flat. Nice to look at the board at about 11:30 on the East Coast on a Tuesday morning and see that we're pretty much on the right page with the sharp moves. The hooks are pretty much all gone in Washington, St. Louis. Down to 7 over with juice to the over now. 7 over 20, 7 over 25. And that Cleveland, Chicago total, looking at it now, under minus 20, under minus 25. So, saved you some sense there, and the work is done. Now the teams have to do the rest. But I'm feeling good, and I'm taking a shot today with four baseball picks, two of them correlated. I like the Brewers big over the Cubs, and we'll talk more about baseball coming up a little bit later on in the show. Congrats to Hideki Matsuyama, who was around 40 or 50 to 1 to win the Masters, and not a lot of people bet him. Most sportsbook directors I talked to said 1, 2, 3% of the total handle in the outright markets. I was amazed at the growth of the in-game golf wagering over the last 5 months. A lot of books were doing new things in April 2021 that they didn't even do in November 2020 for the same event. And the Masters is the most wagered on golf tournament around. It is the Super Bowl of golf wagering. Even on hole 18 on Sunday, you could get wet. Matsuyama on the 18th hole at FanDuel. Birdie or better, plus 650. Par minus 290. Bogey or worse, plus 340. And how about Matsuyama? He left that birdie putt 4 inches short, then tapped in for bogey. So if you bet bogey or worse on the 18th hole, plus 340 cash for you. If you laid 290 on a prop bet, that's what you get. PointsBet was letting you bet hole by hole on six golfers throughout the whole weekend. You could bet this, birdie or better, par, bogey or worse, for six different guys. Eventually, we'll get to a point in time when the trading rooms are big enough and the software is strong enough, you'll be able to bet hole by hole for the majority of the golfers. And almost all the American books had live outright markets up all day long for four straight days. So if you watched Matsuyama midway through round one or two and thought, I'm going to put in a poke on him, you could do it. You couldn't do this 3 years ago. And I talked about the make-miss-the-cut markets with Teddy Greenstein last week. Dustin Johnson was minus 1,200 to miss the cut. if you flip the script on that, you could have found DJ as high as plus 550 to miss the cut. Rory McIlroy was as high as plus 450 to miss the cut. DJ and Rory both missed it. Rahm and Thomas were 5-1 or higher to miss. Cantley plus 480. Spieth plus 480. But if you bet four of those guys and hit one, you're up money because of the big price. If you hit two, forget about it. I had a long conversation one night here in Boston with Rufus Peabody about how he attacks a lot of these golf markets and how he attacks the prop markets in the Super Bowl. He throws a lot of bread out there, but he's betting plus ROI on the high side. I think one of the best cashes he had, best bang for his buck, was betting Chris Godwin between 0 and 9 receiving yards. Now, he bet him 0 to 9, 10 to 19, 20 to 29, but if you just hit one of those ranges, you make a shitload of money. So keep an eye on those. If you can take down one of the big dogs, one or two of them, you can make a lot of money in golf. It's not easy because, as we know, the heavy hitters usually make the cut. But if somebody has a bad Thursday, Friday, you can capitalize. You have to find the right golfer to fade. I like the tweet from Will Gray from the Golf Channel. He said, Zalatoris 21, Spieth 14. It's a discussion. Now, Zalatoris is the 24-year-old that finished second at the Masters. He was 10th last month at the Arnold Palmer, 7th in late January at the Farmers Insurance, and tied for 6th last year at the U.S. Open. Will is insinuating that Zalatoris is coming, and that might be a guy that's going to win a couple events this year. So keep an eye on him. I like the top 5 and top 10 markets more. Obviously, your price goes down because you're not finishing first. You can finish 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or all the way through 10. But Zalatoris will be a golfer that I will be checking out in the near future. Made a trip on Friday to go bet the Boston Bruins to win the Stanley Cup. And we did it for content here at Nesson, so I decided to make a trip. I picked Rhode Island over New Hampshire because I wanted a physical ticket. New Hampshire, you have to cross the border, then sign up for DraftKings and do all that. I didn't want that. I wanted a physical ticket. So I made the trip to Twin River, which is in Rhode Island. And I was under the impression that Twin River was a William Hill joint. William Hill had 20-1 on the Bruins. So I thought, all right, I'll just drive to Rhode Island. I'll walk into Twin River. I'll walk into the sports book, and I'll make that bet, 20-1. Well, I was mistaken in many ways. First of all, it's an hour 10 there from downtown Boston. So it took me an hour and 10 minutes door to door. It took me another 20 to find the fucking place when I got into Twin River. And it's not even a sports book. It is a bank of kiosks inside the race book. So you're walking around looking for the signs. Here's the roulette. Here's blackjack. Here's all this. Where's the sports book? Well, there is no sports book. So eventually you get up to the kiosks, and there are 4 in a row, and I realize it's not William Hill. It is Sportsbook Rhode Island. So my prices were a lot lower. 14-1 instead of 20-1. But at that point, I'm already pissed off. I've already taken an hour and a half out of my day. Now I want their money. Now I want to take Sportsbook Rhode Island for $6K. Bet $400 to win $5,600. Pay out 6 stacks. Hour and a half home. Went back to work. Did the shows on Friday. And late Sunday night, the good news, Taylor Hall is now a Boston Bruin. Now, this won't change the market that much, and I wrote about this on Nesson.com/odds. He's going to move it a couple dollars. You know, some of the books went from 18 to 16. Some went from 20 to 18. MGM went 18 to 14. And Dave Sherapin talked about this in the column. The Hall trade doesn't really change the betting odds that much. What raises eyebrows for a line maker or an odds maker is the return of Tuukka Rask, who by all accounts is going to play Tuesday night when the Bruins take on the Sabres. Tuukka has only played 15 games this year, people. People look at the Bruins, oh, well, they're fourth in the East. They've been down 2 or 3 defensemen for 6 weeks. Guys have been in and out of the lineup, banged up, and they've been playing 2 rookie goalies for the last 2 weeks. Rask has been hurt. Halak has COVID. They're treading water, but if they get in, they are dangerous. Hall brings them line balance in the top six forward group, and he gives you options at the top because the Bruins have been stacking Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak, and then teams key in on that line, and there's no depth on the two line. But now you can put Hall on that two line. You can go Hall, Krejci, and Craig Smith, or you can switch Smith and Pastrnak. You have options here. Bruins have better balance offensively now. And my big stance is that nobody wants to see a healthy Bruins team in the playoffs because that'll be a team that is tough to score on four times out of seven. You don't want to face the Bruins in a series because they get better over the course of a series, a lot like the Blackhawks used to do in 2010, 2013, 2015. I'm not saying the Bruins are the best team in hockey, not even close. But the way that they're built and the way that they're wired, they are a tremendous hockey team. And if they make a run, it'll be behind their structure and behind their defensive responsibility and their goaltending. I love the idea of you betting 100 to win 1,400 or 1,600 or 1,800. You can't find 20 to 1 anymore. Those numbers are gone since the trade. But I do think Boston is in a very good spot, assuming they get in. They've got several games in hand. The Flyers and the Rangers are 4 points behind, but the Bruins have only played 39 games. Those two have played 41, and the three teams above the Bruins have played 42 apiece. So Bruins looking okay, getting better, starting to find the health, and it should be an interesting stretch. Assuming they get in, I would love to see them face the Capitals in the first round in the East. They'd be plus money, and I think they'd win that series. That was my trip, though. You can't bet sports in Massachusetts yet. They're hopeful that the governor signs it by June or July, and they get it up to speed by September for the launch of NFL. But that's what you have to do. You have to drive from Boston an hour north to New Hampshire, hour-ish, and bet on DraftKings. Or you can drive an hour 10 south, cross the border to Rhode Island, bet at a casino or on the mobile there. It's a nightmare. I took it for granted living in Nevada and Illinois the last handful of years. Illinois, I can roll out of bed and make a bet at any point, at any time. Don't have to drive anywhere. Don't have to go anywhere. Shop around for prices. You can't price shop in New Hampshire, Rhode Island. There are monopolies. But once the gate goes up in Massachusetts, you're going to have FanDuel and DraftKings and MGM and PointsBet and Barstool and FoxBet. Everybody's coming into Massachusetts, and I can't wait because I won't have to drive an hour 10 there and an hour and a half back to prove a point or to make content. Baseball, we mentioned what I like, went under 7.5, Cardinals and Nationals, and after we made that position under 7.5, Vegas Rick woke up and blasted the board. So he took the hooks away from everybody. Now it's 7 over 20, over 15, over 18, you name it. But I was told yesterday that some of the national players got the vaccine. This is not why I strictly made the play. I do like the combination of Flaherty, Strasburg. I think that's a 3-1 final either way. So gladly we'll go under 7.5, that number long gone. Still like it under 7, of course, but I like the hook a lot more. If you're late to the party, sure, go under 7 at plus money. And then the other total, we went under White Sox and Indians under 7, minus 110. And the minus 110 is all gone. Minus 20, minus 25. Giolito has been very good this year. And we talked about this heading into the season on Chicken Dinner. His development over the last 3 years has been very strong. And he was a fastball command pitcher when he first came up. But then he added his breaking ball and perfected the breaking ball. This year, it's the usage of the changeup and the development of the changeup. He throws three pitches for strikes. He can also throw those three pitches for outs. He can throw the changeup for a strike, and then he can drop it low to get a swing and a miss. He didn't have that. Even last year, he didn't have that. And Bieber has such good stuff. He is such a monster when it comes to strikeouts. There will be a lot of zeros in this game. So went under 7 there, and I am fading this Cub team. I don't care. They suck. Fade this team and do it all month. Cubbies are 4-6 right now, and six of those games came against the Pirates. The upcoming schedule is a bear. Two more in Milwaukee. Then you come home for 9 games. 3 against the Braves, 3 against the Mets, 3 against the Brewers. After that gauntlet, you go to Atlanta for 4 more. That's 15 games on the docket there to wrap up April. Cubs are lucky to go 5-10 in those games. And it is the Cubs, so they won't be huge underdogs. Let's say on average, they're plus 125, which is the price they are today on the road. But if 9 of the games are at home, that won't even be the case. But let's just pretend they're plus 125 in all 15 of those games. So on average, the favorite's minus 145. If the Cubs go 5-10 in those games and you fade them, you're going to be up almost 3 units. And they won't be plus 125. They'll be minus 110, minus 15 a lot of the times when they're at home. This team cannot hit. Through 10 games, they are hitting 164 as a team. 49 hits in 10 games, 29 runs scored. They can't get on base. They don't drive guys in, and they don't put the ball in play. The whiff, as Dan Patrick used to say on ESPN. Awful offense. Awful team. We'll talk about this later on with Joe Ostrowski about how bad they've been. But I will be keying in on Cub fades for the rest of the season. I don't think this team's going to win 75 games. The Red Sox have won 6 straight, averaging 8.83 runs per game, hitting .332, slugging .574, Red Sox 7-2 to the over. Wow. That'll be a way to look, too. I don't know that they stay this hot in the win column, but their offense is good enough and their pitching is questionable enough for you to look over. 7-2 to the over. And Michael Mayer tweeted this out. In 185 career starts, Jacob DeGrom has allowed 1 or no runs 87 times. 87. Problem is, you can't bet the Mets because they don't hit for DeGrom. He's given up 1 earned run in 2 starts this year, and the Mets lost both games. So if you bet DeGrom, you don't win. I'm thinking you have to look under no matter what. 5-3 final this year, 3-0 final. This year, 1 earned run in 8 innings pitched. 2020, 18 earned runs in 68 innings pitched. 2019, 55 earned runs in 204 innings pitched. DeGrom hasn't allowed more than 3 earned runs since September 3rd of 2019. That's a lot of unders and a lot of first 5 unders. Maryland is locked and loaded for sports betting. And potentially Arizona, Florida next? Question mark. Big shout out to Ryan Butler from the Action Network. He's been all over this stuff lately. At Butler Bets. Go shoot him a follow. He tweeted yesterday, breaking. Maryland Senate passed updated online and retail sports betting bill 47-0. Still needs House approval before the session ends at midnight, but the proponents for the bill are confident that the latest version will pass. Well, the House has to pass it by midnight. What do you think? Duh. Maryland House passed a sports betting bill that could permit 60-plus online sports books, 60, 6-0, plus retail books at sports stadiums and up to 30 other small businesses. Senate passed the same bill earlier today, and Governor Larry Hogan expected to sign it in the law. There you go. Another one. And Chris Grove, we had him on the show last fall at OP Report. Word from key stakeholders in Florida is that we may see a sports betting bill emerge before month's end. That's despite sports betting's absence from last week's gambling bills in Florida. I remember being in Chicago, living in Illinois. This is right after I left Vegas. I left in April of 19, and at the end of May in 19, you started to hear that Governor Pritzker is going to do whatever it takes. We helped lobby for the bill. My dad and a lot of his coworkers, they helped get this thing through. But we had heard at the end of May that the governor was going to do whatever it took to get it through. And there was a lot of opposition. Some people thought it might not happen. But when the states began to see the dollar signs and the Brinks trucks are lining up from all the sports books and all the operators that are trying to come into your state and give you buku bucks, you do what you have to do to make it work. And that's why I'm optimistic about Arizona and Florida and Massachusetts. I remember being told last week of May, if this doesn't get through, the governor will never hear the end of it. People are ready to print money for this state, which has none of it. Needs money every single day. Now, the bill's not going to save the state, but you see the handle numbers in Illinois. They came out of the scene $400, $500 million. Boom, boom, boom. And that's what a lot of these states are seeing. So we're getting close to 30 states. Not live in 30 states, but we're getting close to 30 as far as legalization. 30 out of 50 ain't bad. Got a text from Coach Helfgott yesterday. He's been the one giving us all this NFL draft wisdom. He's the guy that gave us Najee Harris, first running back taken, plus 130. Harris now minus 140, minus 150. He's the guy that gave us Mac Jones under 17.5 draft position 5 weeks ago. Mac Jones position now 3.5. Helfgott told me yesterday he's taking a long look at over 5.5 quarterbacks in the first round at plus $3 or more. He says Kellen Mond, Davis Mills, both gaining steam. And also, I saw this yesterday, Kyle Trask has been rumored from New Orleans late in the first round. So we know that the big five are going to go. That's been pretty much chronicled. And some people think the first five go in the first 10 picks. So you need one team to get that itch and scratch it over the final 22 picks or so. And Mike says at that number, plus 300, he's thinking over 5.5 quarterbacks. The guy's been rock solid with draft props for years. NBA, NFL, he is nails. He knows what he's talking about. And he's looking at over 5.5 quarterbacks first round, plus 300. Last thing before we get to Joe O, Ian McDonald, longtime friend of the show. He used to tweet and text me back when I was working at VEASAN, at iMac44. We used to have a thing, the boys and I, called Make 'em Shake. That's when you would make a bet that doesn't really have a chance of winning, like a future or a two-team, three-team parlay with all plus money, or something that's just, you know, a golf guy at 125-1. We used to say Make 'em Shake because whether it was an illegal bookie or a sports book guy or whatever, somebody behind the counter that sees the bet and goes, oh, wow. One that makes somebody look twice. Well, Ian is the king of Make 'em Shake. He tweeted at me a couple weeks ago. I forgot to get to this, so I'm glad I'm doing it here. It's that time of the year again at SP Shoot. This little beauty pays almost $2 trillion. Imagine being in a trading room and seeing this bet come through. Six-team parlay. Tigers win the AL Central, 60-1. Pirates win the NL Central, 65-1. Rangers win the AL West, 60-1. Rockies win the NL West, 50-1. All right, he lost me already. Marlins win the NL East, 25-1. Orioles win the AL East, 60-1. $100 wins $1.98 trillion. It's a waste of $100, but can you imagine if that happened? I love the shake. There's no way all six of those teams win divisions. But $100 to win $1.98 trillion is fucking hysterical.
Joining us now on Chicken Dinner, he is the host of BetQL Daily. You can listen Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern. Longtime host at 670 The Score. And our former running mate here on Chicken Dinner, the one, the only, Joe Ostrowski. What's up, buddy?
So we finally got to the bottom of the list. We finally got there. After a couple of years, it's the revival of Chicken Dinner. Like, all right, I guess I got to throw Joe on.
That's not exactly how it worked. I wanted to get North on first. I had North on last month. And once I checked that box, I'm like, all right, I have everybody on the score that I need.
Oh, geez. Good, man. How you been? It's a busy time. A lot has changed in the business over the last few years since we started doing a podcast, which we thought nobody was listening to. But years and years later, I still hear about Chicken Dinner.
I finally feel like I have return on investment, if that makes any sense. All the years, all the bullshit, all the times I got fucked, all the hours that I wasted, all the moving, all that. It finally worked out. you know, when Rick Jaffe called me, and you know Jaffe because you used to do mm-hmm. podcasting at VEASAN. Jaffe called me in about March of 2020. And I was just getting out of my VEASAN deal that I had quit and moved back. So March 2020, I'm so close. He's like, we're going to bring you out to Boston in April. And once the contract ended, I haven't told many people the story. Once the contract ended, 2 days later, Rudy Gobert started touching microphones. And a day after that, sports were canceled. I didn't know what I was going to do at that point.
Yeah, you were doing all sorts of odd jobs, right? Just to get by at the
teaching
time?
Teaching class, tending yeah. bar. I almost drove Uber for a little bit. I was going to work in a restaurant because...
Chicago Dogs, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Chicago Dogs play-by-play. And those games were five-hour affairs. The game would start at 7. It'd be like, all right, we're here in the bottom of the 8th. It's 14 to 12.
Like, right.
Oh, the odd jobs. You nailed it.
Well, so... The reason we started doing this podcast and jumping more into the sports betting coverage of things isn't because we knew it was going to blow up like this and we're going to be ahead of the curve and this is going to be our careers. We're smart. Everybody else is dumb. Yeah, they're sort of paying attention to it during football season, but they're not really paying attention. They don't really understand. They're just regurgitating some stupid trends they hear when it comes to sports betting. We have always had a passion for it. And that's how we connected years ago. And if you have the gene, you know it. It's usually passed down from your father or your uncles, but each of us had it at a very young age. It's not what we see in a lot of people, which I say good for them if they're finally like, oh, wait, my in sports media is going to be sports betting because this is blowing up and it's not going to stop. It doesn't appear like the bubble is going to burst anytime soon. Now, we got lucky because what we happen to have a passion for has completely taken the nation by storm, even though we're now only about half the states are now legalized. So we got lucky, but it's not like we just decided that we're going to put a lot of energy into it because we can make a career out of it. And when we talk about it, you can tell that the passion is there.
It's a hobby turned career. You're totally right. But I mean, you know, since I went solo on this show and you've obviously had a lot of success doing your own thing, and I know we're both very happy for each other, but it was a hobby turned into a career because when I'm at WGN Radio, you know, I started as an intern and a producer and a reporter and eventually get to do weekend mornings, which was a nightmare because the last thing I wanted to do as a 24, 5, 6-year-old kid is be up at 6 in the morning on a Saturday to read 30-second updates or whatever. But mm-hmm. we turned this hobby into a career. And I think the void that the city of Chicago had when we started this show, because Jay Hood and Herb Lawrence, a couple other guys said, you guys have to meet. And we didn't know each other. I knew who you were. You knew who I was. But we didn't know each other. We knew there was a void for the conversation because nowhere could you hear anything sports betting related in Chicago.
Now you can't avoid it. You can't avoid it. It's the point where don't you kind of chuckle when you hear people that you've known much of your career and you know for a fact they've never placed a wager in their lives and you hear them touting some sports book that you've got to go bet with, you got to go with them. Oh, I'm looking at this parlay and that parlay. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, now you're in on sports betting when the dollars come into play.
I knew that it had made it. And when I say it, I mean sports betting. I knew sports betting made it when Dave Ennett texted me for a Wildcat total. This past October, and it was Northwestern Wisconsin or something, and Dave had the itch to ask me what the total was. And I almost fell over when he said, you know, hey, what's the total of this game? I responded, 42, probably closes 40, and he responds back, I like the under.
Did he say what's the total, or did he say what's the over-under number?
He did say what's the over-under, now that you mentioned
it. Yeah, of course. Yes, that's perfect. Wow, when David edits in, everybody's in.
Bob Surratt is reading FanDuel ads on WGN Radio.
But you never thought that it would get to this, right?
No.
You never thought this. We knew
no.
It was going to explode. It was going to be bigger and bigger. It got to a point where I'm like, okay, what are we doing? I enjoy fantasy football, but come on. The next thing is this. Like, I never thought that DraftKings and FanDuel would be our sports betting leaders, right?
Correct. I did not think so. I also didn't think that Governor Pritzker was going to not have remote and then have remote and then take it away. Somebody got the bag. I said envelope last week, but it's not an envelope in that state. It's a bag. It's a suitcase. It might be a couple suitcases. What the hell is going on there?
Yeah, the more I say, the more quiet they are about it. What's going on is last Friday, they decided, okay, let's end the remote registration. And what I can't believe, Sam, is the constituents, some of them in this state, are buying what the politicians are selling them. I'm like, really? You've lived here, well, many of you, your entire life. You know how the game works here. And they're still like, oh, it's fine. That's the law that was written up. Let's go back to in-person registration. If you're a sports bettor, you already have your apps on your phones anyways. You're registered. What's the big deal, Joe? Like, they still don't understand. This is still exploding. It's not everybody that is ever going to place a bet has already done so. And they don't all have the apps on their phone. It's still growing. And there are still three books lined up, I'd say, in the next half year to enter the Illinois market. And you know what's going to happen? They're going to fail or they're going to back out. Because why the hell would you enter a market that is being dominated by DraftKings, FanDuel, BetRivers, PointsBet, when you can't have the remote registration? If you already have three to four apps, Barstool, by the way, too, now, if you already have the apps, why would you make sure that you're going to add the score or you're going to add BetMGM and you have to go to some small city about 150 miles away? It's not going to happen. So the upside was, it was looking like Illinois in short order was going to have the second or third highest handle in the country. But now that's going to slide. Maybe the next couple reporting months, they will get in the top three, but that's going to slide back because of poor policy.
I had to explain this, though, to many people, because I think, you know, guys like you and I and the circles we run in, we understand what remote registration means and doesn't mean. I had many people ask me, well, wait, what does this mean? Like, how do I get a DraftKings account? I said, well, if you want a DraftKings account as of X, you have to drive 4 hours down to East St. Louis and walk in there with your ID and your phone and all the bank stuff and whatever you want to do. And you have to then drive all the way home and then you could play at DraftKings. And this person doesn't even bet on sports. And his response was, that's fucking stupid. And I said, yeah, it is. What about FanDuel, he asked. Well, you have to drive to Collinsville, which is 3.5-4 hours in a different direction. So he said, wait a minute, you're telling me if I, who live in Chicago, if I have to drive from Chicago to East St. Louis to Collinsville back to Chicago, that's going to take me about 8 hours or 12 hours to do that. I said, yeah, it is.
Or you cross the border over to Indiana if you want to stay legal. Or what they're pushing people to do is to stay in the illegal market. Mm-hmm. And that's what people don't understand. And the biggest part, Sam, that upsets most bettors, we haven't even hit on, oh, you can't bet on sporting events involving Illinois collegiate teams. And we just happen to be legal in the first college football season that has an Illinois team in the Big Ten championship game in Northwestern. We had an awesome Fighting Illini team in the top five much of the year. In the Big Ten title game, couldn't bet on that. In the NC2As against Loyola, couldn't bet on that. How much money did the state say no thanks to because of that stupid rule?
They would have made at least $250,000 on Illinois futures losing.
Yeah.
At least. Oh, yeah.
People, I would hear from people every day that were so mad they couldn't bet on the Illini to win the title, and they didn't even make it to the Sweet 16. But we don't need to talk about that.
I have a dream list for Chicken Dinner, to change gears. I have a list of people I need on this show, and I'm sure you have this too. I mean, we all have our elephant list of people we want on our shows.
It's not Artie Lang, is it?
We already had Artie Lang.
I know.
Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah.
Pete Rose.
Yeah.
Roxy Roxborough, Al Michaels, Lisa Ann, who still dodges me.
Wait, was she ever supposed to come on the show?
I thought you booked her, and then her PR person said, hold on, give me a week, and then she went off the grid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
We had to, like, we had to email her manager's assistant, and then we looked like the biggest creeps because we're trying to get this porn star on Chicken Dinner, and now she's like a fantasy XM radio host.
Yes, and I think she does stuff for Bovada. So maybe that was part of – she followed me on Twitter.
She follows both of us. She follows the show.
Can't get her on the show.
Last person on the list is Billy Walters, which will never happen. He's my favorite character of all time. I went back and listened to the episode when we took the Lara Logan 60 Minutes. Jaybird, Wolfman. And the people, they're like raiding Billy Walters' garbage outside his house to get the hot tips.
That would be number one on my list. In fact, when we were starting BetQL Daily, my terrible executive producer came up to me, Eli Herskovich, and he goes, which name, which person would create some sort of a buzz in the sports betting industry? Who would be a great guest to have on? I said, the list begins and the list ends with Billy Walters.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt. And to my knowledge, 60 Minutes is the only place that has landed him, correct?
That sounds right. And now that he's out of prison, I don't expect him to ever speak in public again.
No. We got so much. If you have not, you're obviously into sports betting. If you're listening to this, go look up on YouTube 60 Minutes Billy Walters. You will not regret it.
It is one of the funniest clips. And we used to play the audio back on our show. And, you know, he's Spanky 30 years ago. Because Spanky now has all these different outs across the country. And he's got guys in all these different markets, and he calls them beards, and they fire bets or they fire bots or whatever. But Billy was doing that shit in the 70s and 80s, and then his beards would get busted because then everybody would know that all these guys do is win, and he would get his beards kicked out. So then he'd have to go find a new beard to go in and make a bet. And then at that point, you know, if Billy Walters is trying to get down $300,000 on an NFL game or a college basketball game, you do the math. I mean, you're doing long division here. You're talking $300,000 divided by 15 people, maybe.
And hey, we advocate for legalized gambling as much as anyone, sports betting. But the dirty secret is, if you're any good at this, I'd love to know what Billy Walters thinks about some of these sports books that limit people to $57 bets.
You know, it's crazy you say that, and I'm not going to name names, but there were a couple books during the national championship, going into the national championship, they were advertising their free plus 200 odds boost on the national title. If you like a side and a total, you get a free $200 bet. Yep. And then you look on the other side of gambling Twitter and it's like, hey, they won't take my $70 straight bet. They pick and choose. Mm-hmm. They pick and choose. And the worst thing in the whole industry, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but the worst part about the whole sports betting industry is when a sports book tweets out a winning 8, 9, 10 team parlay ticket. It is the worst. It is by far the worst thing to do because everybody sees that and thinks, that could be me.
I hate it. I want to scream every time I see those, especially the random ones, Sam, like the 12 and 13, not correlated at all. Those really bother me. I want to reply every time I see them. Now show me your biggest losers. Show me the biggest losers. How many of the, let's say, 5+ parlay tickets you got, how many of them are losers? How many of them are winners? They're never going to do that. I get it. It's all marketing. I was talking about that with someone actually earlier today. Worst part of the industry? Oh, man. We could go on and on forever about frauds. But can you believe place you used to live? Freaking, I forgot you can swear. Fucking Vegas Dave.
Oh, billboard.
Has a billboard. Vegas Dave has a billboard out there. Unbelievable.
Does he still live with his parents?
I don't know. Ask Kelly. Don't ask Kelly.
Where's all his money at? He still lives with mom and dad.
I know. Who's his girlfriend? Casilius's ex-wife.
Oh, Holly Saunders.
Holly Saunders from Gold.
What has she done with the lips? I don't get the lips thing. I don't.
Disgusting. I can't stand the people not only touts, but just the people that rip other people's information, hard work, and try to take credit. Try to take, like, this is my own work. Look what I picked. And it's clear where you're stealing your picks from. I can't stand that, too. There's a lot of stuff that really bothers me. We want this industry to grow, but in so many ways, sometimes I want to warn people. I'm like, okay, don't do this. Don't follow this person on Twitter. Please stop. You're going to get yourself buried in a hole. One thing that I hate to see, and I know it happens all the time, is people dip their toe and you win a little bit and then you think you're an expert and then you go all in and then it all gets taken and then they leave the industry. They're like, I'm never doing sports betting. I hate it. And then they walk away forever. This is all about entertainment, and that's what it should be. It is not a get rich quick scheme at all.
Speaking of entertainment, I want to talk a little sports betting for a couple minutes here. The Cubs offense.
not entertaining, yeah.
They have played, I didn't realize this until I saw your tweet, I think it was yesterday or this morning. Now, full disclosure, I have a pretty solid position on under 79.5 wins on their team because I don't know anybody in their rotation that isn't named Kyle Hendricks, and I don't count Arrieta, who hasn't been that good, you know, in a while. They played 6 of their first 9 games against the Pirates. How do we use that going forward? Can we pretty much put faders on for the next couple weeks?
I think so. As always, you look at the matchup on a day-to-day basis. But we spent in Chicago, at least what I heard from many people, and you know how it is, a lot of people here are fans, right? And they're going to look at the optimistic viewpoint, and nothing's going to go wrong in the season. But then you start playing the games, and injuries happen. And if you don't have depth, that's going to hurt you a little bit. It's hurting your Sox a little bit right now. Hopefully it won't kill them all season long. But if you're looking at this clear, like, how many years in a row are we going to say the Cubs lineup has way too much talent to be that bad? They can win a mediocre division. They have way too much talent. Well, no, maybe the outlier was 2015 and 2016. And what they really are is what we've seen over the last 3 to 4 years. And you're right. They have one starter and a bunch of 4s and 5s in the rotation. I don't care if you're in a mediocre division or not. You're not going to do anything with that. And bullpen's tough to project from season to season. But the big issue is the lineup. All they do is strike out. And for some reason, they are so hesitant to make big change on the north side. I don't know what they are so scared of. They've got to tear this thing down instead of making Anthony Rizzo a Cub for life or a big extension to Javi Baez. We still don't know what he is at this juncture.
I think that the offense was helped out by the pitching that nobody understood at the time. When you're in the eye of the tornado, you never really understand what's going on until the tornado has ripped through the town and gone on to the next state. That 2016 Cub rotation, let me just give you the ERAs. Lester, 244. Arrieta, 310. Hendricks, 213. Lackey, 335. Hamill, 383.
You know the biggest key there that you didn't even hit on? And you're right. They were terrific. None of them missed time.
Yeah,
how
that's
often
true.
Does that happen?
They all started 30 games.
They were healthy for an entire season. And this, you can credit the pitching as well. That was arguably one of the best defenses that we've ever seen in the game. And even though the offense would smash from time to time, they didn't have to do a whole lot for them to win consistently.
How do we play this this Bears win total? I know it's early, but good Lord. And I don't mean to keep going down the Chicago path here, but I think it's interesting to have these conversations in the middle of April. You know, Fox Bet put up a 7.5, and the juice was -140 to the under, which I hate. That naturally makes me think, all right, well, I like the over now because I want +10 or +20. But you look at their schedule, man. Oh, my God. It's like 4th or 5th toughest in the league. I don't know if they're going to protect Dalton. I don't even like Dalton to begin with. Where do you even start with that number? Even if, let's say it's 8, 7.5 or 8 in a 17-game season, which way are you leaning?
They posted a 7.5 after the addition of game 17.
Yes, Foxbet did that 3 days ago. 7.5.
And juice the under.
-140.
Oh, man. That's brutal. I hate to say it, man.
You're just saying it because it's a plus price. Don't even fucking start.
Yeah, I know. I don't even. But 8 wins is still below 500.
Yeah, it's 8 and 9 now. It was funny because the guy at Foxbet who works with the trading room, he said, I think that that is the biggest difference between our trading room and the team's front office. He goes, because I think Ryan Pace thinks they're a 10-win team, 11-win team.
Absolutely. Well, the key that we have to look at is everybody on the coaching staff and in the front office is playing in field two. They're playing and they're coaching for their jobs this year.
For a while now.
So you would think that every action will be about desperation, and it will be every move will be about what's going to help us win games this year, but they also have to finally go get a quarterback. Would it shock you if everything goes wrong this year and they go 4-13?
Not at all.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me either. And you mentioned the tough schedule. Sam, it's all on the road, too. That's the key to look at. It's going to be hard for me to say over on this team. It's going to be a mess. It just feels like a repeat of what we saw a year ago. What's the difference between Foles and Dalton? Like, people want to act like there's a big difference. They've already said that Dalton's a QB1, which is just insane to me. It's going to be a rough year. I probably won't have a bet on it, but if you're forcing me to take something, God, I guess I would lean over 7.5, but as an observer of the team, I want them to have 3 or 4 wins so they are forced to make these decisions to blow it up.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky winning 12 games was maybe the worst thing for the franchise. Mm-hmm. It set them back, even though they went to the postseason and they had flaws because they were trailing all game in that game against Philly and they missed the field goal. Him winning 12 games was the worst thing that could have happened. And then them making the playoffs last year was the second worst thing because everybody keeps their job except for the quarterback. It's just we keep the coach and we keep the general manager, and it's a mess. I have two more things I want to touch on quickly, man, and I love chopping it up with you. I look down at the clock, and I'm like, holy shit, we've done this for 22 minutes already. But I think, you know, I'd like you to explain a little bit of your day-to-day when it comes to handicapping because you're a very busy man. Mm-hmm. I see you on live 3 hours a day. You're doing other stuff. You're writing. You're doing digital videos, you're doing all sort of stuff. And then you've got, oh, by the way, the 670 The Score job, and you're hosting on the weekends, and you're doing all this stuff. Where do you find your time to handicap, and how much handicapping do you do?
It was challenging during the football season because I would do my share of at least 2 to 3 score shows at night, which would be 6 to 10 p.m. Central Time, and I've got the morning show 9 a.m. to noon. That expanded after the football season, actually. It was a 2-hour show, and now it's a 3-hour show. And I didn't even really talk to you about this. I never made an announcement about it either. But I decided that the best thing for me and the best thing for my career and the shows that I work on is to dial back the score work because it is such a challenge. And you're one of the few people that would understand this. When you're doing a local radio and or TV show, and then you're doing a national TV/radio podcast, whatever you want to call it, you're doing two completely different shows. So now the prep time is like double for each.
Triple. And I'd say you end triple up, for the national show because you're handicapping.
Oh, man.
You can't just pick and choose. I'm going to talk about LeBron here and Brady here and the Cowboys here. You have to know all of these coordinators, all of these coaches, all of these conferences. Knowing college football in itself is a full-time job.
Well, how about right now? Like, I love golf. So, of course, we had the major this past week and the Masters. So we did a lot of coverage on that. NHL trade deadline was earlier today, the day that we're recording this. We still have a month of regular season NBA action as we get set for the playoffs. Major League Baseball in full swing. The NFL draft is a couple of weeks away. There just aren't enough hours in the day. Oh, by the way, you've got a family and your son has baseball tonight. And well, can you take him to baseball because we've got dance at this time? So I just decided, hey, we know that this is going to be my future. So I need to focus more on this. I don't want to give half-ass effort to multiple jobs. It's ridiculous. And if I give up a few bucks, I don't give a damn. I don't want to look back years from now and say, I didn't give 100%. It could have been so much better. So I decided to dial back the score work a little bit. I still have my sports betting show, Early Odds, every week, which airs Saturday mornings. But more of my work is focused on Odyssey's digital work and the BetQL Daily Show now.
Yeah, but you don't take that, you know, 2-3 hours that you would have had at the score and just...
I can watch the games now, Sam. I can actually watch
the games. Well, you have, that's the other part of it. You have to watch the games, too. But I'm just saying, for you, I'm coming to your defense. Like, you're not going to take those 2 and 3 hours and go ride around on a bicycle and eat ice cream for 3 hours. You channel that somewhere else. And what I've found is that if I'm not up at 7:30 a.m. Eastern, I don't get my fair share of alone time that I can watch the board move and do my work and see what I need to see. Because if I, and I love the people I work with, but if I go into the office at 10 o'clock in the morning, everybody that walks by is like, oh, Sammy P, how about the Bruins? Or, oh, nice pick last night. Or, oh, you really whiffed on that one. And it's like, I keep getting interrupted. So if I don't have time to do this by myself where I can get in the lab and do what I need to do, people don't understand that handicapping happens off the clock. We don't do that shit on the clock. We need to do it off the clock to be ready when we're on the clock.
Most of my capping on a daily basis for the day-to-day sports, NFL a little different once a week, but for the day-to-day sports happens between 6 and 9 a.m. Central time. That's when I'm doing all the prep, getting ready for the show, capping all the games, all the sports, all the storylines, all that stuff. And you're right about watching the board move. It is amazing because I will cap a game, you know, at 7:30, 8 a.m. and I'm on the air talking about it 2 hours later. And a line has completely moved. Completely. NBA. Oh, the NBA. How tough is it to bet the NBA right now?
I haven't made an NBA bet in a year.
Good for you. Good for you.
No
and even
shot.
If you bet the NBA early on in the season, it's almost unbettable right now unless you're treating it like another job and you are in front of your computer watching as inactives are flying out, you know, sometimes less than 30 minutes before tip.
My last question, it could be a one-word response if you want, but I hope you have more than that in the tank right now. Yes or no, is Shayen Irving the best person we've met through Chicken Dinner?
Yeah.
It has to
be. I'm just, wow. What a shot at Joffy. Just a direct shot at Joffy.
I like Joffy a lot, but... I didn't watch. Shay showed up. We used to tape the show. We used to have to hide in the back of WGN Radio because I couldn't come to the score for security purposes. I think it was just hard to get me in the building. We used to sneak you into the bottom of Michigan Avenue through the back door, up the back elevator to go into the back studio, and we would do our show. And eventually we said, all right, we need to get Shay in here because he was living in Humboldt Park at the time. I drove him home one time. I don't think I ever told you that story. But... he comes in, he must have had a six or a Tecate on the way. And then we drank a bottle of tequila during the show. And then he's like, you want to go out? I'm like, yeah, I do. That guy is insane.
I love that guy. You're a little intimidated the first time you meet him because you've heard him on the radio and they wouldn't show his face on the Dan Patrick show. Like, is how much of this is an act? And then you meet him like, yep. None of it is an act. That dude is the craziest and at the same time the most hilarious motherfucker I may have ever met in my entire life. And I wish he didn't move off to... How far are you from Connecticut? Like, he still lives over there, right?
I believe it's about a 3-hour drive. I've been told everything is pretty close here. I can get to Maine in an hour and a half. I can get to Rhode Island in an hour 30. I can get to Vermont into, I think, Connecticut, depending on where he's at. And he'll never tell me where he's at. He's one of those guys that just shows up. When he's around, he'll let you know. Like, he's like a Lyft driver. When he wants to drive,
that's awesome.
He turns it on. When he's at Fogo de Chao, he turns the button green. You know, like, he'll let you know when he's available.
When we, how about that March Madness? We went to the bar with him for a Thursday.
I don't remember
that. The man kept delaying showing up at his daughter's birthday party so he could stay at the bar on day one of the tournament and drink with us.
He said he had never had that much fun for an opening day of a tournament. And I take pride in that because we took him out. I think it was the first game was at 11 o'clock, 11:15. And we got him so fucked up.
He was there before the bar opened.
I know. He was knocking on the glass door. in the front, and nobody was there to let him in.
When are you back in town?
I will be back. I actually was looking at the schedule. I'm looking at a swing May 14, 15, 16. I want to see the Sox at least once. And I'd love to see you if you're around. Can you tell the wife and kids you need like 3 hours with me?
What is that, a Friday? Oh, yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it looks like, I think.
I feel like Saturday would be better for you. Because weekends used to be your nightmare, but now I feel like it's easy. It's a little easier.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, weekends are the time. Just make sure your dad's there, right?
My dad will not be there. I will make sure he's not there.
That's more trouble.
We're out of time here on Chicken Dinner. You please follow one of the Chicken Dinner founders at Joe0670. He's the host of BetQL Daily, Monday through Friday, and you hear him on 670 The Score. I can't believe we started this fucking show 5 years ago, but I am so happy we did, and I am so happy for your success. It's been a roller coaster, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
No BS. I don't think either of us are where we are in our careers right now, and both of us so happy and happy for each other without doing that show.
And we survived VEASAN. Buck!
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Joe O for hopping on. I miss him so much. I miss working with that guy. Record check 113, 102, and 4, up 2.4 units, and we have 4 in the hopper in baseball. Brewers, money line, run line. Indians, White Sox under 7. Nationals, Cardinals under 7.5. We'll talk to Dave Sherapin, friend of the program, on Thursday, and we have a guest list sort of ironed out for the rest of the month. Sarah Perlman next Tuesday. Next Thursday, we're going to talk NASCAR and UFC, big events next weekend. Jeff Cugliandro and Andre Kachaturian. The week after that, John Lerner and Barstool Big Cat. And then into May, we got some surprises, Dwayne Colucci, Lauren Jaffe, and several more guests to follow per usual. Cash some tickets, make some money. I'm feeling good. Got 4 in the kitty on baseball. Talk to you Thursday right here on Chicken Dinner.